Hello, my name is Brian Delaney, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of Road Safety at Rush Hour, a podcast dedicated to discussing the latest topics in roadway safety and innovation. This podcast is presented by the Roadway Safety Foundation, a national nonprofit organization dedicated to reducing the frequency and severity of motor vehicle crashes, injuries, and fatalities through improvements to roadway systems and their environment. On this episode, we are excited to be discussing rural road safety. And I am thrilled to have two guests who will be able to provide excellent insight into rural road safety. With us on this episode, we have Jamie Sullivan, director of the National Center for Rural Road Safety, and we have Brian Roberts of BCR Consulting. Welcome, Brian and Jamie.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So let's jump into rural road safety. So what are the issues taking place on rural roads?
What we've seen from data that's available from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration is that about 46% of the fatalities are occurring in rural areas. This information is interesting, as 97% of U.S. land is considered rural, but only about 19% of Americans live in rural areas. So although 46% of the roadway fatalities are happening there, which is slightly less than urban areas, the fatality rate is actually more than two times higher than on urban roads because of the number of people living in rural areas in America. And the biggest part with safety, whether it's rural or urban, to know is that each of those numbers, each of those fatalities is a name. It's a person. They have a family and friends. And we really need to try and get to zero with those fatalities. One of the best videos that I've ever seen that explains how this is one that's done by Victoria, Australia, and it's called There's No One Someone Won't Miss. And I would encourage everyone to go and take a look at that video.
I was looking at some NHTSA data recently regarding rural roads, and they were saying that rural roads are accounting for just about half of America's vehicular deaths. And in 2016, there were 37,461 overall traffic fatalities, with rural areas accounting for 50% of those fatalities. Jamie, why is this the case?
Well, there's a lot of contributing factors that we see in rural areas that are very different from urban. So we see the unique terrain that happens in rural areas, those big, beautiful vistas that we like to see with the mountains. Those cause different alignments and roadways. We have longer distances. You see a lot of those in the Midwest with our agricultural areas. We have varying road conditions a lot of the times in rural areas too, where they're due to uncontrolled intersections. We have the weather impacts where we have severe weather that occurs in rural areas. We also have an increased number of tourist areas in rural, and that makes a lot of brings in a lot of drivers who are unfamiliar with our area. For instance, they've found that about 44% of rural passenger vehicle traffic is actually urban residents traveling to destinations outside of their urban home. So when they're in our rural areas, they're unfamiliar with some of these weather impacts and unique terrain that we see. We also have longer distances in rural areas, which causes more exposure. There's fewer alternative routes and fewer alternatives for mobility and accessing places. And we also have longer response times in rural areas. So it can take almost two times as long for emergency services to get to you when there is a crash. And lastly, there is also sometimes a different risk perception that happens in rural, because there is less traffic and there's less deterrence because we have a lack of funding sometimes to support in additional enforcement. So because of this, we have people that are more comfortable making choices that they may not make in other cases as well.
Right. There's large differences between urban roads and rural roads, and there's a lot of issues that face both and also exclusively face rural roads or more predominantly face rural roads. And so I want to talk a little bit and focus on infrastructure and roadway design. And when we put these crashes that are happening in the context of infrastructure and roadway design, what can be done to improve these rural roadways and make them less crash prone?
Those were excellent points that Jamie made, a very comprehensive view of looking at the rural system. And I would say just one thing in general, and I don't think it's real controversial, is that rural roads are generally less safe than our urban roads. And so there's a higher risk. So that's one issue we're dealing with, the risk issue. But there's also a difference in terms of exposure. There's lower traffic volumes that we see in rural environments. So that means we have to analyze the system differently. So you looked at some of the statistics, and you were specifically looking at some high-speed statistics earlier, I believe. I think what you'll find is in our urban environment, the two-lane undivided highways are really the high-risk highways, and those often come at higher speeds too. So to really look at the rural system, we have to use what's called a systemic approach. Because of the lack of exposure, the lower traffic volumes, we don't see the number of crashes, but we do see, as Jamie said, 2.5 times the rate. So what we do with a systemic approach is different than what we might do in an urban environment. In an urban environment, we look at where the crashes occur, and we have a lot of data. And so we can use that data to identify what we call hotspots and apply countermeasures there. One of the problems we have in the rural environment is generally a lack of data, much less data. And because we have lower volumes, we may not be seeing the crashes that you might see in an urban environment where you have much higher traffic volumes. So what we do is we look at the issues that might account for this. So one of the ways we can look at that, I think the best analogy I've heard of for explaining the systemic approach is when you go to the doctor. You go to a visit, you go for a checkup. They look at your conditions. They look at, you know, your history, your lifestyle. Do you smoke? Do you drink? How much? As opposed to waiting until there's an incident, a heart attack or something like that. So they'll do a number of tests. And that's what we do with the systemic approach. We look at what are the critical issues. Is it curvature? Is it run off the road? And then how do we address those? And I think an excellent example of how you might want to approach this is the Federal Highway Program on EDC Forward. I think that's a very practical approach they're using. They use a systemic approach to identify those areas where there may not have been any accidents yet, but the conditions are there for accidents. And in particular, they focus on run off the road. So that's a good approach. Key in that is going to be selecting countermeasures for those conditions that we know are suspect in terms of accidents or crashes.
So many countermeasures exist. We're talking a little bit about countermeasures, and I know we're going to go and talk a little bit about FHWA's Forward program, focus on reducing rural roadway departures. Before we step into that, in the realm of roadway design as well as technology, many countermeasures are being piloted and implemented in urban environments. However, does that necessarily mean that they will have the same application or be applicable to rural road environments as well? I know we talked a little bit about how they're very different in many ways, and the data might be lacking in certain situations with regards to rural roads. So how do these urban environment-based pilot programs or countermeasures, how are they applying in rural roads?
I think that's a great question. Because we do have unique characteristics in both urban and rural, many of the countermeasures that are applied in urban can be done in rural, but they do need to be tweaked a little bit in order to be put into rural to make a bigger impact the way that they should. So for instance, we've touched on a little bit on the lack of data and also on the lack of even traffic in a rural area. So some of the countermeasures that you'd use in urban that are more focused on congestion will not necessarily work in a rural area. But the background or the technology behind it could be used for something that we find as a bigger concern in a rural area. For instance, a lot of us are used to seeing dynamic message signs, which are those electronic signs on the side of a road. So in an urban area, those are used more to tell you about a traffic crash that may have occurred, about congestion upcoming, maybe about an alternative route you want to take based on the congestion or the crash. In a rural area, those still exist. They're still used, but many times they're used for other things. So they could be used to let you know about bad weather on a mountain pass that you may want to avoid, or they could be used to let you know about a special event. Or, for instance, we're in an area where there's a lot of forest fires, it could let you know that visibility isn't going to be as clear in those areas. So some of that technology can still be used in both areas. It just needs to be framed in a way that will help the rural area. Another issue that I think we're going to come up with as well is that there is also a lack of communications and a lack of power sometimes in rural areas. So we've all been there where we're traveling and all of a sudden our cell phone cuts out. And we know that that does happen a lot more frequently in a rural area. And so when we start talking about technology, we have to think through some of those pieces as well and what actually is possible in a rural area based on these issues that we may have with communications and electricity.
That's a good point. And that was something that I was going to touch on is in a lot of these rural environments, there's definitely issues that are really hindering the ability to utilize technology. You talked a lot about, or you just talked about power and how that can be challenging, and when the application of countermeasures can be different in rural environments as opposed to urban. How are DOTs that serve many rural areas or highways, how are they addressing these problems? How are they overcoming the issue of limited cell service or lack of power? How are we able to communicate and promote roadway safety in these environments that might not have ideal conditions or the resources to provide countermeasures that work in more populous urban environments?
Well, I don't know that they are pursuing the high-tech options so much now in the rural environments. I think that will come. For now, the automated technology has been really focused in the urban environment, and that is a concern. We don't want to be left behind. All this new technology that is one of the ways we'll get to zero is with technology. I think we haven't reach that point yet of you know, high deployment of low cost automated practices and things like that. It will be an issue. Clearly, will be an issue. Another issue is the technology that is used now. The latest technology does rely to a large extent visually on the roadway system, cameras that read striping. So if you don't have good striping or you can't see with your eye, the camera may not be able to see it. Really basic things like that is what I think we're focusing on now. But we definitely want to be able to take advantage of the other techniques. I was encouraged in talking to the automotive industry. They are actually looking at, as their technology advances, they are starting to look beyond just looking at striping on roads or looking at the geometric image where they can see the edge of pavement, things like that. At least when there's no snow on it and when it's visible. But there's certainly a long ways to go in that area. And getting back to what Jamie said, I think a lot of the practices we use in an urban environment clearly can be used in a rural environment. But one of the differences is we're talking about such a large area, and we simply cannot put countermeasures everywhere. That's what we would call a systematic approach, which is different than a systemic. So it's important to understand those two differences. So we have to rely on low-cost measures more. But I mean, you will see roundabouts in rural areas, not as much, but you're starting to see them. But again, we tend to focus on, you know, signage, striping, maybe rumble stripes, keeping the cars on the row, more of those low cost measures.
Right. Yeah. And that's important. I think that we need to keep in mind the technology that we're able to implement that is maybe low cost or low tech. It requires less of those resources. Another issue that you touched on a little bit, Brian, that I want to go back and discuss in more depth is this idea of the movement towards autonomous vehicles and connected infrastructure. One of the topics that is circling around the roadway safety community and the autonomous community is talking about vehicle to infrastructure connectivity. And how does that fit in to a rural road environment? Like you mentioned, we have huge expanses of roads that these cars are driving down, and an infrastructure that is connected by technology or connected by, say, wireless connectivity, with cell service being sometimes weak within rural environments. Do you think autonomous vehicles and connected infrastructure is possible, or is going to be achievable in rural road environments?
So personally, I do think that it will be achievable and possible in a rural environment. It may look a little different than how it will look in an urban environment. But we do know that, especially when we were talking about those 44% of urban folks who are driving in rural areas, they're going to want to see some of the same things that they see in their homes as well in those urban areas. So I do think that while it may take a little bit longer to put it in rural areas and it may look a little different, that it will be there. There are some things that are happening right now in the rural areas. They are testing a pilot for commercial vehicles currently in Wyoming, which is clearly very rural. So that is a great thing that they're doing one of the pilots there. They also have done a research project on what some of those issues may be in a rural area that make it a little bit harder to put automated and connected vehicles into a rural area. So they have started looking into those gaps and figuring out some of the solutions. And they also just recently this summer started a project on some of the systems engineering pieces. So looking into what those communications and power issues may be on rural corridors for the automated and connected vehicles too. So as Brian mentioned earlier, it's just a matter of knowing that it will look different, but making sure that rural is not left behind, that we are in all of this research that they're doing, trying to figure out how it could be possible in a rural area. And you're already seeing some of the rural states take on some of these power and communications issues as well. We've seen one state who, as they've been replacing the roadways, has been putting in some of the power infrastructure that's going to be needed to make some of this happen. There's another one that we know is looking at innovative ways to do the communication. So while they can't use the wireless and cell phones as much, they're looking into how to use radios and some of the low-tech communications infrastructure to do what needs to be done.
Another question that I have, talking a little bit about preparing the rural roadways for this movement towards autonomous vehicles. Rural roadways, sometimes when it comes to like striping the roads, the overall condition of the road is not as well maintained as an urban environment, and that can definitely hinder an autonomous vehicle's ability to sense the road, identify when it is departing from a lane or even departing off of the road. What must happen to implement these AVs when it comes to infrastructure? How are we going to be able to maintain the roads or get these rural roadways up to a standard where autonomous vehicles are able to communicate with their infrastructure, roadways, infrastructure and roadways ahead of them?
I agree with Jamie that I believe it is possible and it will happen eventually. The environment is different, as Jamie said, and we have many more challenges. But I think, and I'm just guessing here, that we will probably rely on the technology in the vehicle as opposed to technology in a corridor, which you might see in a smart city or something like that. So the vehicle itself will have between radar, LIDAR, video. I think that's what we're going to have to rely on the technology side, at least, you know, for the next 10, 20 years. But that means that we have to improve the state of our infrastructure in the rural environment. And we need to do that anyway, by the way. But it means good striping. It means good pavement. And there will be places where the technology is just not going to work for a while. But getting back to those low-cost countermeasures, striping, signage, lighting, things like that, I think that will help us in the interim.
And I want to also jump in here, too. One of the ways that we will be able to make this a little bit easier for rural areas is with the funding. So right now, Funding usually is tied to the number of people and to the amount of data that you have for an area. And with rural areas having less people than urban areas tend to get more funding. And so what we're seeing right now for rural is that they're having a hard time funding even the everyday maintenance and construction and infrastructure that needs to be fixed. And so sometimes it's a matter of having to make that decision about whether or not you want to put in some of this technology to advance the state of the practice versus really just maintaining, as you're saying, everyday roadways that need to be updated and upgraded. And so the more funding to rural would help with some of this. But another thing that we're going to have to think about as well is that Brian just mentioned too, is that there may be some places where the automated and connected vehicles just won't work in a rural area. For instance, when we talk about unpaved roads, which there are a lot of in rural areas, those unpaved roads most of the time will not have striping and such on them, but they're being maintained to a safer quality than what even a paved road may be in that area at such a low volume. And so there may be a need as well for the technology to figure out another way to use some of this other than just roadway striping and come up with some innovative solutions when there is no striping available.
Right. And I recently looked at data analyzed by the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, and it stated that in 2017, 71% of crash deaths in rural areas occurred on roads with speed limits of 55 miles per hour or higher. So we're seeing speed as a component or a risk. By comparison, 29% of crash deaths in urban areas occurred on these roads. Now, despite this, IIHS did indicate that there has been a general downward trend in the proportion of crash deaths involving speed as a contributing factor in both rural and urban areas since 2008, with that proportion declining from 33% in 2008 to 27% in 2017 in rural areas, and from 30% in 2008 to 26% in 2017 in urban areas. You talked a little bit about investing funds into these roads to promote safety, investing in safety. Can we assume that the design of the roads contributes to fatalities? If we're talking about speed, if we're talking about, you know, roadway departure crashes, issues occurring on rural roads, can we assume that the design is the problem, and should we be investing funds in roadway design?
More than likely, I'm going to guess that those fatalities, 71%, most of those were two-lane undivided roads where there's just a much higher risk. The higher speed urban roads are going to be safer. That's all there is to it. You don't have as many trees along the side of the road, objects. You invest more in those urban areas because there's more people there. But clearly, we have to look at where those are. And if 71% are on those speeds, that's where we should target. And again, I'm willing to bet the majority of those fatalities are roadway departure fatalities at high speeds. So there's a number of things we can do to improve those roadway conditions. I don't know that we're out there designing a lot of new rural roads, but we're certainly redesigning, updating, reconstructing, improving. So there's a number of things that we can look at there to keep people on the road.
My last question that I want to pose is, what does the future look like for road safety? With zero transportation fatalities as our goal, what needs to happen going forward?
So personally, the future for rural road safety for me is that I really hope that one day we get to that goal of zero, that we hit that, because as I mentioned at the beginning, each one of these numbers is a person. It's someone's friend or family member. And so they're really, like that video says, there really isn't someone that wouldn't be missed. And so getting to that goal of zero is so important. And for rural, one of the ways that we can do that is making sure that rural continues to be on the radar, that people continue to prioritize safety, that they continue to put into place these countermeasures that we already know work, and continue to provide more funding to rural. And there is a brand new initiative that was just announced by the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Secretary of the Transportation called ROUTES, which is Rural Opportunities to Use Transportation for Economic Success. And that program is going to be looking at what some of the disparities are in rural transportation infrastructure and providing some of the information about financing opportunities, hopefully to be able to allow some of this infrastructure to get fixed as well.
I believe in the goal of zero, like most of the people that work in highway safety. And if you go back and you look at the Road to Zero, which I was on the steering committee, they put out a report last year. And I'm going to apply their findings to the rural environment because it's exactly what I think the future is. First of all, it is investment. It's recognizing that we need to invest in the rural environment. And in many ways, through basic infrastructure, but in this case, safety practices. We have proven safety countermeasures that we know work. And that's somewhat of the frustrating thing for me, because if we look at some of the other fields where lots of people are dying, opioid crisis, gun violence, those are really difficult problems. And I'm sure there's experts out there who have great ideas, but we have proven measures that we know work. We have data that shows these things work. So many lives will be improved. So we really need to implement what we know works, and we have so much information there. We definitely need to take advantage of technological advancement. I'm very excited about the things I've seen just in the last few years about keeping cars on the road, avoidance, collision avoidance. There's just so many practices out there, so we need to definitely advance that.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Jamie and Brian, for taking the time to discuss rural road safety today and providing invaluable insight on this topic. It is a very important topic. It is essential to achieving zero transportation fatalities, and it's important to have rural road safety as a topic that continually gets discussed. So I'm really grateful for your insights and your knowledge and for contributing to our podcast.
Hey, thank you, and thanks for raising attention to this issue.
Yes, I agree. Thank you so much. We appreciate being asked.
So in closing, on behalf of the Roadway Safety Foundation, I would like to thank our audience for tuning in to Road Safety at Rush Hour. If you enjoyed this podcast, please follow us on Facebook and Twitter at the Roadway Safety Foundation, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or your favorite podcast network to hear our next conversations. As always, this is Brian Delaney signing off, wishing you safe travels all day and every day. Goodbye.